If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process. From syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns, automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days, a 101-night sleep trial, and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. Ghostbed, the coolest beds in the world.
Doesn't it seem like the Satanist witch would just grab that when she's done? Like,
you'd think, right?
Okay, you have to put it right under there, but then go get it. You were able to put it there, so go get it.
I'll just make another totem. It'll be easier that way.
Keep it on a string, and you don't even have to crawl under there again.
You hate it when people leave a dirty workspace, don't you? It's just, oh, it's the worst.
Who closed? Who's the witch who closed last night?
This is fucking terrible. Is this virgin blood? It's all over the workstation. This looks terrible.
Now there's fruit flies.
God awful movie.
Movies.
Welcome back to God Awful Movies, where each week we watch another terrible movie so you don't have to. I'm your host, Keith Enright, and I'm joined by the legendary Eli Bosnick. Eli, how's it going?
Pop Scare!
Yep, good one. And
Pop Scare podcast host.
We also have veteran masochist and protege of Alan Dershowitz, Andrew Torres is here. Andrew, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Heath. That's right. Alan Dershowitz, seriously, 100% taught me everything I know about criminal law, and I am bringing that majestic knowledge to your ear holes here today.
I don't think Andrew's exaggerating. I think you really did learn a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, that's absolutely
now
true.
Now I want to watch Alan Dershowitz defend a doll.
We're getting close.
Yeah, yeah, right.
All right. Well, let's get right into it. Andrew, what are we going to be breaking down today?
We watched The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. It's the story of a kid who murdered his drunk-ass landlord for hitting on his girlfriend. Or is it? No, it is.
It is.
It's also about a gazebo, to be fair.
Yeah, it turns out it is a gazebo.
Those are nice structures. And Eli, how bad was this movie?
Well, if you thought The Exorcism of Emily Rose was a fair and balanced legal drama, but you're still waiting on that biopic of your hero, financial advisor Bernie Madoff, you will love this movie. It sucked so much ass.
It's really real bad.
Look,
real bad.
A lot of the movies we do are badly made. A lot of the movies we do have bad ideas. It's rare that a movie is so well made by so many grown-ups and still sucks so much ass.
it's all lying. The whole thing, they do not stop lying for 2 hours of this movie. It's so rough.
So rough.
All right. Is there anything you'd like to nominate this one for being the best at being the worst at?
I'm going to take the easy way out here and go best worst steaks. We'll get there. I mean, steaks of the movie. I don't mean, like tasty meat products.
No,
but,
there's no tasty steaks.
Yeah.
None metaphorically or literally.
No.
I'm going to go with best worst demonstration of having magic powers.
Ooh, yes.
We're going to get to the details of it, but it's just absolute nonsense. One of the characters who is a liar is demonstrating to the police that she has magical powers.
Oh.
And the police come up with the dumbest demonstration test for her.
They do. Yep.
You can think of. Think of something dumb. This is dumber.
Yeah. If you have just thought of flip a coin, you thought of something slightly better than what the cops come up with in this movie.
Only slightly, like 17 percentage points.
Here's how bad this movie is. I thought your best worst was about the Satan witch who will have at various times super speed, indestructibility, the ability to go through walls, and ouchie, you hit me with a rock.
Well, yeah, that's all ridiculous. But the Satan witch actually has those. This demonstration by the liar is just over the top.
The Satan witch is a great reason why you should always have a lawyer look over your contracts, people.
Say, Satan witch's powers are like Superman 3 levels of like, wait, they can do that? Yeah, yep. It's totally bonkers.
Yeah, they are a perfect combination of they can do that and they can't do that. Oh, and see, I took the easy one. I'm going to go with best worst protagonists. And yes, I am aware that we have had movies where Kevin Sorbo was the protagonist. Look, the heroes of this movie all have real life corollaries, and they are, as Andrew mentioned, a guy who murdered his landlord and Ed and Lorraine Warren, two con men of the highest order. You would be hard pressed to find three people who suck more ass than the good guys in this movie.
Yeah. I wouldn't call murdered a guy a corollary. That's the main plot of the real story.
I have an argument to the contrary, but we'll get to it. We will get to it.
All right. Well, I think it's time for a quick break, and then we'll be back to tell you all about The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
And isn't it true that you are not the murderer?
Not three, four. Yes.
Gotcha.
Damn, that's good.
Yeah.
Hey, Heath. Hey, Eli. Why are you guys in my office?
Oh, we're practicing for when we're lawyers.
What? When are you going to be lawyers?
As soon as there's a masterclass.
What's masterclass?
Come on.
Seriously, Andrew?
What? You guys made me adjudicate four subsections of this contest.
A whole nother column of the spreadsheet. This is ridiculous.
Fine. With Masterclass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. You can learn how to meditate from Jon Kabat-Zinn, improve your chess skills with Garry Kasparov, or learn how to cook from Gordon Ramsay. With over 100 classes from a range of world-class instructors, the thing you've always wanted to do is closer than you think.
Including being a lawyer?
Well, no, but you can learn anything you want otherwise, like buying and selling real estate from Robert Refkin.
Or Sales and Persuasion from Daniel Pink. I actually recently watched that one, and even though I sold stuff for almost a decade, I learned a ton. I thought it was a great class.
Wow. I mean, that does sound good, but do you recommend that I try it out?
I highly recommend you try it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, and as God Awful Movies listeners, you get 15% off an annual membership. Just go to masterclass.com/awful. That's masterclass.com/awful for 15% off masterclass.
Wow, that sounds great. Now, all right, as long as you're in on this masterclass thing, did you guys try the not guilty trick yet?
Yeah, no, we just did that one.
Oh, that's a good one.
Right?
Like 90% of lawyering.
Daffy Duck gets him every time.
Okay, everyone. Welcome to the first writer's room meeting for The Conjuring 3. So, what are we all thinking?
Oh, okay, I got a good one. So, what if in the movie, Annabelle.
Nope. Dave?
Yep.
Dave, I'm going to stop you right there. We are done with the doll.
But people like the doll.
I know people like the doll, Mitch, but we have used the doll. We have done all possible scary things with the doll. So unless you guys are about to pitch me on Annabelle fucking opening a stand at the farmer's market with her gay lover in Des Moines, we are done with the doll.
Okay, farmer's markets aren't actually good for the environment.
Nobody goes to them because they're good for the environment, Dave. Like, they go so you can give money direct to farmers.
Just inefficient.
Guys, you cannot have this farmer's market fight at every meeting, all right? Look, we agree the doll is out. There have to be other spooky events we can talk about, right? Did we do the Amityville house, right? Ed and Lorraine were there.
Yeah, but we did that. We did that one.
Oh, crap. Brainstorming. What else is scary?
Like haunted graveyards. What about that?
Murders
ooh,
are scary.
Ooh, that's good. Murder. Yeah. I'm sure Ed and Lorraine were part of a murder or something, right?
Kinda. One time a guy who lived near them killed his landlord, and so they spent months making it about them in the press.
Great. Why don't we just pretend that that's something and we can make a movie about it?
Yeah. That actually sounds pretty good. We could even add a villain instead of just, nope, he murdered a guy.
Yeah, murdered a guy, exactly.
Question?
Yes.
Are we going to be distributing this movie through theaters and retailers, or did you want to set up like a roadside stand for people to come get it like that?
People like you are destroying the heart of this country, Dave. The heart and soul of the country.
Okay.
You're not even a vegan. And we're back, and we're going to start with an evil robot killing somebody in a wood chipper as the opening logo thing. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. Can we also mention that the background noise soundtrack that's auto-tuned cicadas playing the tuba?
Yep. Yeah. We mentioned that. God. Very true.
All right. You know what? This is a perfect setup to this movie. Now that I think of it, neither of those things are weird, knowing what's going to happen now.
Terrible and makes no sense. Exactly. So we're going to start the movie by reminding you that the protagonists of this movie sat there using their pretend magic powers while a priest tortured a mentally ill 8-year-old. So, yeah, that's the first thing we're going to start.
Yeah. Right. There's a title card and it says July 18th, 1981. Ed and Lorraine Warren were called to document the exorcism of David Glatzel. So that's what we're watching, this little kid getting exorcised by a priest, and Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are supposed to be the protagonists of this movie, are filming that for their liar documentary, right?
That's the child torturers.
Document is a weird word when you're not, you know, conducting research to be published in a scientific journal. Like when you're just a guy, it means doing nothing and filming it.
And the first thing they do when we actually see them on screen after the title card is take a break from their exorcism. Are you allowed to call a timeout with Satan? Is that how it works?
I love that. They're like, yeah, all right. We should probably stop for a second. The priest actually says, my powers are too strong. This kid can't take my magic. It's too much for an extended period of time. So we'll take like a little water break, have some oranges, and then we'll get back to the exorcism. And this is like a pregame. They're not even actually doing the full exorcism yet. They're like warming up and doing, I don't know, exorcist yoga here.
Everybody knows you have to stretch for 15 minutes before you can do the exorcism. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, you'll get a cramp.
Yeah, okay. It's all about breathing. And I was trying to pay attention to this part of the movie. They're like putting the kid to bed so he can get some rest before they exercise him some more. But I noticed that this kid had a light bright on a bedside table. And I was so distraught. I wanted a light bright so bad.
Really? Eli, I have to tell you, light brights are like basically one of only three or four 1980s toys that held up. I would play the fuck out of light bright right now. And also,
how do you play
create
with it?
Better special effects. You put the little push pins in the black board. Yeah, it's great.
Light bright.
Oh, you're
light
done. I never understood. I could sing you the entire light bright song right now.
Yeah.
But I have no desire. I never wanted to play one. I don't understand it. It wasn't. I was a simple kid. It's not a sport. So.
I mean, that's because you probably grew up with a computer, but look.
Also that. Yeah.
And a penis to masturbate. So there was a lot going on. Anyways, he's sitting there. I'm admiring the light bright, but Arnie, that's the sister's boyfriend, comes in and comforts him by saying, you know, child who's going through an exorcism, I got bullied as a kid, so I know exactly what it's like to be possessed by the devil.
Samesies. Yep.
And this kid is trying so hard to be cute in this. I mean, he all but sings like, I love not being a demon. I love not being a demon. I'm adorable. So, you know, nothing's going to happen to me in 18 seconds.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Honestly, this little kid is my favorite actor in the movie. Favorite character. He's pretty great.
Oh, yeah.
And right here at the end, he's like, hey, Arnie, lock it in. Fucking pop the question to my sister, you fucking coward. Let's go. Let's go. I'm getting exercised over here. I might die because of a demon. Get fucking married, man. Gather ye rosebuds while you may.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we're going to introduce truly the main character of the movie, unnecessary pop scare.
Yes. Yep.
In this scene, it's going to be a door knocking pop scare.
We all have essentially the same note right here, which is this movie invented pop Foley. Like, it's so weird.
Yeah. But it's the priest, and he's ready to do the exorcism. But before he can, the kid is going to go into the shower and get Satan or something.
Something.
This scene was so fucking dark. It was impossible to tell what was happening.
Well, yeah. So the kid hears a bunch of banging on his door of his room. And then he runs into the bathroom and hides in the shower and pulls the shower curtain. And then there's like a demon puts his fingers over the top and then unsheaths a sword for a second.
That the metal on metal scraping of the knife was like so jarring. It was incredibly weird.
Very uncomfortable. And but then that demon doesn't do anything with a sword. That demon just as a prank apparently turns the shower on that had like a red blood packet in it. It gets showered with blood as a prank by a demon.
Very prank-based demon for the first 9/10 of this movie.
That was weird.
But the parents come upstairs, right? And they do that thing that everyone does in a horror movie that no one should ever do in real life, which is the kid is like standing in shadow and they can barely see him. And they're like, Michael, is that you? Michael?
Leg stab.
Right, a leg stab, exactly.
It's okay, way too fast. This little kid, I didn't like any of this movie, but I really didn't like, I was genuinely scared. I have a lot of trouble with this sort of thing. I don't like it. He's too fast. It's uncomfortable.
I don't like pop scares either.
Very
so
upsetting.
I muted 99% of this movie because, fun fact, pop scares don't work if the movie's muted. Because it's the sound that actually makes you jump. So it's just the kid being like, eh.
Oh, I'm going to start playing like 80s music like the rest of this movie did.
Absolutely, yeah. You'll fucking get it.
I learned something here today.
Yeah. But the kid, he gets stabby for a second. They grab him. There's this great moment where Ed has the kid in like a headlock and he's like, Father, we need to speed up this exorcism. The kid's getting stabby.
Yeah. And the father argues back. The priest is like, I don't know. We were doing the pregame. It's a whole thing. We need. And dad's like, right fucking now? Stabbed me in the leg just now. You didn't see how fast he was? We're doing the fucking exorcism. Forget the yoga, man.
The priest goes, let's drive him to the church. Why would you have come here if a part of it was driving him to the... Oh, we do a pickup and delivery service. We're really great.
And then we have... I'm sorry. I had to comment on Ed carrying the like squirming demon child down the stairs where he's reaching out to like rake the walls and he is Wolverining the shit out of the wall. Well, I mean, it is, he touches the wall and then in post-production, someone adds Wolverine claw marks in MS Paint.
But, right, exactly.
It's amazing.
Starts as the shape of an eraser and then it kind of comes
down. Use the spray can.
Is that a dull-edged scratch you put in the wall? That's, how'd you do that?
I'm not even mad. I'm just impressed. So they're exercising away, and mid-exorcism, Lorraine has a psychic vision, which I should point out, in real life, means that this fucking bitch couldn't make it through a child torturing without making it about her. Right? Lorraine Warren had to be like, wait, 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 everyone stop torturing the child. I am special.
And also, question, as somebody who is new to the Conjuring series of movies, Has Lorraine always been cast as Uncanny Valley Sydney Powell, or is that just me?
Very much.
God, I haven't seen any of the other ones either, but I would imagine yes.
Oh, so I have seen all of these, and the weird subplot that the Conjuring movies have accidentally created because, I don't know, someone's granddaughter is allowed to take a last pass at the script is like, Ed's always like, Lorraine, are you using your psychic powers again? And she's like, yeah, no, I gotta. It's a Lucy and Ethel dynamic that really throws off the whole series, I gotta tell you. And then the demon kicks the shit out of everybody.
Oh my God. Okay. This movie is genuinely funny and doesn't realize it, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah. This moment, this was the first of many times. This little kid, he's my favorite. He beats the shit out of a room full of adults from on top of this table. He's doing like sweep the leg moves and just kicking people right in the face so hard. And they're just flying everywhere. I couldn't stop laughing at this point. It's so good.
He also gives Ed Warren a heart attack at this point, which I just want to point out is historically true. Ed Warren did have a heart attack, but it was because he was a fat piece of shit and it didn't happen during any of their magic adventures. He was just sitting at home and had a heart attack.
Yeah, people have heart attacks. That's not generally magic.
Yeah, but this is when the inciting incident of the movie is going to happen. They're all exercising and Arnie is like, don't take him, take me. And can I just say, why are people constantly offering themselves during exorcism? Right? Constantly. Like, it's not necessary for an exorcism. And yet in every exorcism movie, at one point, someone's like, would you consider moving it to me instead?
I don't know. That's like a free hero move in my head. I'm going to do that for sure. Because it's nothing's going to happen, but you look like you tried to save a little kid from something.
Oh, you think he was bluffing and he was like, ah, shit, demons are real.
And it actually turns out they are real in this universe. Yeah. It's pretty funny. He's like, hey, buddy, David, little kid, just be cool. Ooh, what if the demon kills me and's coming to me? I'm fucking your sister. Come on, let the demon into me.
So, yeah, the demon jumps into Arnie very obviously. I really wanted Ed to turn to everyone else in the room and be like, okay, so do we just start working on the guy who just got filled with a demon? I feel like we're all here. It'd be weird, but no. No, they're going to wait and see if he's an asymptomatic carrier of the devil. And that's the end of that scene. So now they're going to slip us another title card 10 minutes into the movie.
Ugh, yeah. Okay. It says, the exorcism of 8-year-old David Glatzel was meant to end the months of torment. But for Arnie Johnson, it was just the beginning. He's the sister's boyfriend. The tragic events that followed made nationwide headlines and led Ed and Lorraine Warren to the most sinister discovery of their career. And I'm just curious how many sinister discoveries they have. They've lied about a few, right?
You don't rank the sinister discoveries in your life? Yeah.
How do you even rank? Whatever. It doesn't matter. It also says based on a true story here. Okay, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Speaking as a lawyer, the word based does a lot of work in that sentence.
So now it's barbecue time and love interest. Jesus, what is this girl's name? Do we ever learn her fucking name in the movie?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. So Girly McGirlface is gabbing with her mom about Arnie wanting to leave their shithole small town.
Yeah. Nothing important is happening right now, except one thing for me. Again, this movie is very funny. So
I know what you mean.
Arnie is about to go inside. He's playing with David. He's playing with a little kid out in the yard, and he's about to go inside, get the plate of meat for the barbecue. And as he's walking away, David, this little kid, hits Arnie in the face with the football so fucking hard.
So hard.
Like, I know, it's not so like good. Not like you, oh, it's a Nerf football. I dinked it off your head.
Nope.
He stabs him in the eye with the point of the football so hard.
It is truly the first stabbing murder of this movie. It's also very clearly not a kid who threw it, right? Like they had some fucking PA. They were like, yeah, just beat him in the skull bone with a football. But this is the first of the, and this is a thing with bad horror movies, right? If your horror movie is about nothing, you've got to spend a tremendous amount of time with someone being like, that's weird. I guess I'll figure out what that was to slow, creepy music. And in this case, it's going to be a cereal box.
You are not. That's not for comedians. It is like the producers watched the first hour of Poltergeist and were like, yeah, okay, but is there something less interesting than chairs moving? Right? Oh my God. Yeah, they settled on a cereal box.
A cereal. Oh. Yep. So he's staring at a box of cereal. We went inside to get the meat. He looks over to the side. He sees a cereal box moving and he's like, yeah, that's kind of weird. I better go solve the issue of the moving cereal box in this horror movie. So he walks in the other room, but it turns out it's a pop scare mouse and it's not a demon. Or is it?
Yeah. And apparently he's one of those people who, when they see a mouse, just sort of follows it around the house like he's hoping to watch it fuck.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I gotta interrupt. I get that both of you guys used to live in New York City, but like, that's a fucking rat, guys. Like, that is not a mouse, okay?
That's not. I feel like living in New York City, that helps us know whether
it's a rat if it can carry a full 8-slice pizza down a set of right, stairs. Yes. Otherwise, it's a fucking mouse.
Outside of New York City, that's a rat, okay?
Yeah. And then, so even though he just saw the mouse run in there, apparently the mouse's mouse hole is at eye level. It's fine. Even though he just saw the mouse run in there, he then presses his eyeball up to it like he's hoping for a mouse fucking peep show.
Well, yeah, I was like, all right, man, don't. It's you just saw somehow a rat mouse like fly into the air and go into the wall in a hole at your human eye level. Yes. And I was like, okay, probably don't touch the mouse demon hole, because the hole is like clearly possessed and there's like evil tar dripping off of it. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to fondle this. I'm going to fondle this with my hand. You know what? I'm going to put my eye right next to it now. Like, his dick was about to go into that hole before
100%.
This
no question. Yeah. Yeah. That the eyeball literally breaks the fourth wall in this shot. Yeah.
Yeah, so then there's another pop scare. It's the spooky kid from before, whoa, but he imagined it or something.
Wait, it was a kid?
It's unclear if it's the witch or the kid.
I thought it was just some older guy who's just behind him and then disappears.
I think that's the witch. I think that is the actress who's playing the witch. She is showing up in these pop scares early on.
Okay, she dresses like a pilgrim, maybe.
She does dress like a pilgrim,
maybe,
which
I didn't
makes it
catch
very
her
confusing.
Face enough, or yeah.
Yeah, and she's like off to the side. So let me spoil the movie now for a moment so that we can follow along with her insane fucking plan. The bad guy of this movie is a Satan witch. You know those Satan witches, how common they are.
And the Flash.
Right. Okay. She's bothering this family. She cursed the kid. Now she's after Arnie. And at this point, this movie wants us to believe that her plan is like, all right, Ratty McRattykins, you go into the cereal box. And then when he looks after you into your house, that's when I'll sort of stand behind him and be like, sup. But then I'll disappear. That's her plan at this point.
She's going to slow roll this plan. Super, super, like very deliberate. Going to build the pranks. It's going to be nice and slow.
She does Satan magic like that early phase of texting where you're not sure if someone wants to date or be friends, right? Where you're just like, maybe we could hang out. And they're like, yeah, me and my friends are going out later. And you're like, oh, what does that mean? Satan magic. Meanwhile, over at the hospital, Ed and Lorraine are the ones who sold the rights to this book, damn it. So they're going to get some fucking screen time. This is where the priest checks on Lorraine, and she's sleeping by Ed's bed. And I just want to say, this weird opening monologue he gives her of the, like, you're spending too much time near your dying husband's bedside. Weird take. It's a weird take.
And also, can someone explain the chronology of this movie to me? Like, the picnic, that very clearly had a, like, 6 months later vibe to it, right? But I guess they just, yeah, oh, yeah, exorcism on Wednesday, picnic on Thursday. Like, it's bonkers.
Yep. And then this, I can't believe I have to say this is going to matter. We learn about Ed and Lorraine Warren's first date. He worked at a movie theater. She had a vagina. They went to a gazebo.
Okay, but gazebo, they're so romantic. Gazebo, they have a gazebo rain kiss. This is a very touching scene.
It's not a good story. It's
you're not a good story.
It's like learning about Hitler's first date.
I enjoyed, okay, now it makes, I feel like I have to withdraw what I was saying, but.
also, again, temporally, right? Like, Ed and Lorraine are somewhere in their 40s in 1981, and this flashback is to when they're, like, I don't know, 17, and it is set in, I swear to God, 1874.
Oh, right? Like, absolutely.
Like Ed is a fucking carny boot black. Mm-hmm. He's got the little, like, strap-on hat. Like, what is this movie?
She's wearing clothes from the 1950s at one point. It's very confusing. Very, very confusing.
We only tell you this because there's going to be an amazing tie at the end.
Total. To that. It all comes back together. Let me tell you. So now it's time to cut back over to Arnie, who I guess from that last scene we're supposed to see, like, oh, the demon's in him now. So now he's cutting branches off a tree with a chainsaw ominously.
Just using a chainsaw on a rope. While I'm belted to a tree high in the air, I'm not a demon. Nothing could possibly go wrong here.
You guys hear that ominous music in the background, right? Right.
Yeah, well, he hears it and he looks over to the side at the house. And then whatever it was that did the pop scare with behind the mouse hole, that person is staring at him from the window for a second. Just slow playing that prank thing. All right, I'm gonna stare at him for a second in this moment.
And then it turns on his chainsaw suddenly?
Yeah. Okay, so that was the next step up in the pranks was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn on his chainsaw for like a half a second. He's just going to be like, bah! And drop it. And that's
See,
it.
Now, if this movie wanted to win me back, we would cut over to the witch's whiteboard where it was like, mouse hole, arrow, chainsaw, question mark? Yeah, so that's pop scary and spooky.
Okay, I did get scared by this pop scare, though.
I got scared by all these
pop scares. The chainsaw went on, and I was like, fuck! This is the third time I had to stop this movie and call. So I called my mother at this moment. Like, I really called mom, and I was like, I want to talk to you for a little bit. I have all the lights on that
I'm watching
off
a
now.
Scary movie for my job.
Yeah, I had that exact, that's real thing that happened to me.
Heath's just hanging out on his front porch. What's going on, guys? Hey, taking a little walk. Okay, I'll catch you later. There's no such thing as demons, right? Oh, you're gone. It's good. You're far away. No, you don't have to come back.
You guys want to walk with me? I'm new. No.
Okay. So we come back over to the hospital again, and Ed wakes up to let them know the demon is in Arnie now.
Oh, God. Yeah, and this exposition, like, he's just wheezing out like 8 lines of dialogue. It's like, no, it's got the other kid, Arnie. I mean, I just said kid the first time around so that you'd have to ask that follow-up, even though Arnie's like 24 and I'm 41 and I'd never love it. Anyway, time to lapse back into the coma.
Like, some God, great acting.
Ridiculous.
By Ed, yeah. Okay, but what's happening here? The demon explained what it was doing, but only to Ed at that moment.
We all saw the black eyes, right?
Yeah, I think Ed is the only one who saw what we saw, which is Arnie's eyes turn black when he volunteered himself to the demon.
Okay,
but he was too heart attacked.
Everybody else just thought it was one of those ineffective demon volunteerings. Okay,
yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
And then, in what is one of the most bizarre choices in the movies we have ever watched, we cut over to a stereo fixing montage to super upbeat music.
Yep. Oh, Rocky God. Music for fixing a stereo and picking up chickens. It's weird.
It is Blondie's Call Me. When this scene happened, I literally laughed out loud for real for like a good solid 30. It was just fantastic.
Me fucking too, because it truly, this is what happens in the movie. It's the kid. He's got the kid. Call me, baby, baby, baby. Honestly, if the demon had just been partying around inside Arnie's skull, this is my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, this is Bruno's stereo, by the way. We should meet Bruno. We met him actually a second ago. He is sweaty drunk guy friend, and as soon as we met him, I was like, oh, sweaty drunk guy has 20 minutes max before he dies. He is going to die very soon.
Yeah.
His stereo is getting fixed by Arnie here while we listen to Call Me by Blondie.
Yeah. He stumbles onto screen and is like, why don't we have a drink and we can play Hold Knives to Our Throats? I'll go first. Uh-oh. This is also this is just a thing if you're watching along. This is the cheapest pop scare of the movie. Arnie is kind of staring into the middle distance and the girlfriend's like, hey, but she does it super loud. So it's a pop. She's like, hey, what are you doing? And Arnie's like, hey,
everybody bring it in. No pop scaring me right now. When you just walk up to me, do it at regular speed from the front. No pop scares, please. I might be a demon.
Yeah. So they dance around a little bit. Bruno dances with his girlfriend and Arnie dances with Bruno. Everyone's dancing around having a good time, but then he gets overtaken by a demon and there's a stabby stab stab. And can I just point out how absolutely fucking tasteless this is? Like, look, I did a little Wikipediaing, tried to read up about this murder case. From what I can tell, like, the landlord hit on the girlfriend, so Arnie murdered him, and that's gross. But, like, that's a real guy who died. It's weird to turn that into a spooky scene for your movie.
Yeah.
Right? It would be like if you made a horror movie where the guy who killed Harvey Milk gets overtaken by a demonic Twinkie. Like, no, this is a real murder. It is not a good subject for your weird demon special effects. But anyways, we cut to after the stabbing. For some reason, this movie's very shy about the actual stabbing. So we watch Arnie like wandering along the road and a cop just sort of pulls up and is like, hey, man, you full of demons?
You got demon eyes? You have demon eyes there? And he's like, what? No. Regular eyes. Eyes. I just have eyes. Look at. They're normal.
I guess it falls to me to point out that in Bridgefield, Connecticut, or wherever this is shot in 1981, we're supposed to believe that this is a black cop driving the patrol car all by himself. Yeah, that was the least realistic part in this movie about demons.
Yeah. So he's like, hey, man, your eye's demony. And then he turns around and he's all covered in blood. And he has that great, like, oh, I think I might have stabbed a pie.
It seems like the demon inside would just keep the human's eyes normal for now while he's trying to like get away. No? Or is the demon like trying to get caught? Like trying to set up a test case? Like,
right.
About demon. Well, we're going to find out that there's going to be a test case about demons. It doesn't go as well as I would like, honestly.
Yeah. So later that night, the cops are on the scene solving the very obvious murder, but don't worry. The movie is sure there's another hour and 25 minutes of this movie left.
And we get exposition radio playing, already calling it a murder, right? Like, not guy stabbed, police are investigating possible murder. Nope, they definitely know. Wasn't self-defense, wasn't any other kind of thing. Like, that seems like irresponsible newscasting to me.
Yeah, they got one of the future telling things from Minority Report doing their news telling at this point. Yeah,
I'm going to allow that. That characterizes the witness as a carjacker. So,
so we cut over to the prison where they are having Arnie read the Bible, because if you can read the Bible, you don't have a demon in your butt.
I love that. Everyone in this interrogation room agrees that demons always play by the rule. Right? Like, this is like he's point for right. Like, demons hate it when you read from Second Chronicles. Like, isn't there the demon Heath somewhere who's like, hey, I could just not make his eyeballs go all black when we're murdering him. And when they start reading from Deuteronomy, I'll just tune it out like a normal person and instead of frothing at the mouth. Hey, this is great. Southeast.
Very effective demon, just saying. It's an excellent tactic. But yeah, that means that the demon is gone. And there's this fucking fantastic moment where Arnie's like, okay, but if the demon isn't in me anymore, what do you guys do? And everyone in the movie is like, good question, because we don't even do stuff when the demon's in there. So, yeah, this is a mystery now? I guess it's a mystery now.
Don't worry, the movie will forget about this plot.
Will forget about this plot very, very quickly. So now we cut over to, I think, all of our favorite scenes and one of the great reasons why we had Mr. Torres on today, the scene with the lawyer explaining how guilty he is.
This lawyer just is so angry about having to do this meeting in the first place. And the lawyer's just like, you're all stupid. I'm a lawyer. We're a demon possession defense is what you would like to do. You want me to do that? That my job as a lawyer will be demon possession, not guilty. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I have never been more empathetic for any character on screen than this lawyer in this movie. Because look, like, I'm not going to lie. I've had conversations with clients that have been the equivalent of, I'm not going before the jury. And again, this lawyer says grand jury, which takes me out for a sec, but whatever. this script was written by an idiot. I'll whatever.
It was just the royal grand. It was a jury that happened to be grand in the general sense.
But look, like, I'm not going before the jury and arguing he was possessed by demons. Good sentence to say, lawyer, except that sentence number two, the next words out of her mouth were, because that's never been done before. Look, like, the problem is not lack of testability here on this. Like,
show me the stare decisis of this thing, and then maybe we'll.
No. That's less nonsense than what this movie would have. Yep.
Okay, but Ed and Lorraine are like, yes, we want you to do that as an attorney. You know what? Come over for dinner, and we'll show you what we're talking about. And I was like, show this attorney what? What the fuck are you going to show her? What does that even mean?
Okay, so for clarity, the claim that this movie is making, Ed and Lorraine Warren literally turned their house into a look at our spooky shit museum. Yeah. Okay, so the claim that this movie is making is that when they were about to have the lawyer make this claim, they were like, no, come see our Raggedy Ann doll, which is what Annabelle is based on, and our a collection of broken plates from the Amityville house, which we charge people $25 to look at, and you'll definitely want to lose your fucking license as a lawyer.
Can we go to this house and take a tour, Eli Bosman?
We can't, unfortunately. What? They are dead, and there's no.
Can we go to the house anyway?
I mean, you can't stop us from going to your house. If Andrew's taught us anything, we can go to any house we want until people say to leave.
Don't take legal advice from god-awful movies, okay?
Live show at the Warren's house.
That's what I'm talking about.
Ooh, I like it. All right, so she's like, whatever, do your worst. And then we cut over to court because they sure did convince her with their haunted doll.
They doodly do over the convincing.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what the fuck would that be? What would that look like? And the movie was like, I don't fucking know. Next scene. And they skip it entirely.
It's always best if that's in your imagination as to what was so persuasive.
Right. So now we're in court and this guy, his attorney agreed to this. They plead demon. That happens. And the judge is my favorite fucking part. The judge hears this happen. He's like, how do you plead? Demon, not guilty. And judge is like, oh, you're serious. There's such a long pause while he's just like, what the fuck are you talking? What is happening in my life? And then he's like, oh, that's really what you're saying? You're disbarred. You, the attorney, you're clearly disbarred.
The judge makes a face that I have seen people make several times in my life where they go, oh, this is a whole thing now. That's what the judge says with his eyes. This is a whole thing now.
And he is mouthing the words to the lawyer of like, you can just plead not guilty, you know, like, save the demon stuff for later.
Yeah, but they cut to outside and dang it, because they pled not guilty, the prosecutor is going to ask for the death penalty.
And so, I'm sorry, I'm fixated on the stupid law in the stupid demon movie, but like the real Arnie Johnson was tried for first degree manslaughter because, you know, that's what it was. I mean, do these people think you get the death penalty because you committed a crime and your lawyer is stupid? Wait, don't answer that.
I was going to say.
All right, withdrawn.
Especially with Sidney Powell from...
withdrawn?
Okay,
So they head back home to listen to some... So for some reason, Ed and Lorraine decide that it's on them to clear Arnie's name and prove that demons exist.
Right.
By the way, they would never be allowed to testify at this trial. They just talked to a bunch of newspapers and were like, oh, trust us. If we were in that courtroom, Arnie would totally get off. And whatever poor soul that was the judge of that actual courtroom was like, no, absolutely not. You can't bring paranormal witnesses. But that's not what happens in the movie. So they head back home to listen to some recordings of themselves making shit up.
Okay. Yeah. So they're going back to their reels of tape from when they taped exorcisms. What do they think they're going to find? Like the demons said something on the tape that they missed, like demons narrate, and there's some detail that they're going to catch now?
Yeah. And if you don't Mirandize the demon, like, that shit's not
yeah,
admissible.
Yeah, it's important. So. Yeah. The body camera footage gets out, the mayor of Chicago. All right, look, we got a lot of good demons on the force, and I don't want this to get crazy. And look, I am going to take us to Bummertown momentarily because, one, this is the scene that everyone talks about in the movie, and it's like the true story of the true story thing, which is that the family later said that something traumatic happened to David, that's the little kid who was possessed, on the waterbed. They didn't say what would happen, and it wasn't what happens in this scene, which is like an old lady pops out of the waterbed and grabs the kid and sprays him with water. But like, what I'm pointing out is that the chance that this kid is possessed is zero, because God's not real and nothing happens when you die. The chance that this kid was sexually abused and that caused a psychotic break for him is not zero. And that is a real bummeroony to put in your horror movie.
I think a professional demonologist begs to differ with you, Eli. It was obviously demon waterbed.
Okay, could have been a demon waterbed. There you go. There you go.
Waterbeds are a fucking nightmare. I don't understand. Is that enjoyable for people?
No. Oh. Yeah, disagree. Yeah. As Andrew can verify, lying on a waterbed only leads to one thing, Heath. Sweet, sweet lovemaking. And then seasickness.
Well, I'm definitely not reading my note about how when I was 8, I wanted a waterbed now.
Now we know why. So yeah, back in the present, we watch the kid get attacked by a demon in the waterbed. Back in the present, girlfriend's like, that's stupid. Why would being on a waterbed end in possession? And don't worry, they have an even dumber answer, which is that underneath the waterbed, underneath the floorboards, there's something spooky.
No, there's water damage because the waterbed popped. That's what there is. Yeah. But right. The movie is like, that's not water damage. I think it might be demon damage. Ed and Lorraine are in this room, and like, Ed might as well wipe his finger along this and taste it and be like, that's demon damage. That tastes like demon damage and cocaine.
100% pure demon damage. So they head underneath the house, right, to see this. And I just want to point out that the finding the witch symbol thing in houses is a absolutely stereotypical con that psychics do, right? It is second only to cracking an egg filled with hair.
Okay. So what's the finding the witch symbol con?
So
She's planting a thing, right?
Yeah. You go to someone's house, you go, I don't know, it sounds fucking haunted. And they go, I don't believe you, but I will the moment you do or say anything. So you find some water damage and then you go, oh, better crawl under your house, the spookiest part of your house. And then while you're in there, you pull out a little stick man that you made with your shitty husband at home. And you go, oh, this is a witch symbol. But luckily for 10 low payments of $99.99, we can break your curse. That's so obviously what happened with Ed and Lorraine Warren. But this movie has to make it a horror movie and pretend it's real. So we're going to watch her crawl around. They might as well have a scene in the movie where they decide to play a little game of cards with two black aces and a queen.
I appreciate the explanation, and it does make this scene seem a lot like, hey, I found a Bible written on gold plates. So
yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much what happens. Yeah. Lorraine crawls under, clearly plants this like demon witch totem thing, and is like, oh, look what I found. It's a demon witch totem. It's right under where the kid's waterbed was in that room where the demon thing popped out. So I have a question about what they're saying in this movie. They seem to be saying that the totem, the demon thing, the witch totem, has to be directly under the spot where the demon eventually shows up. Like, demons can only go up, like straight up. Up is the only direction
of
demons.
Has to be under a bed, which means, again, there's an unshown scene where witch the lady is walking around the house going, okay, I'm at 45 degrees west. And, okay, so the wall is here, like a fucking water guy trying to find where your pipes and studs are. Just like, okay, cool. I've got to get under. She puts it in the wrong place and his foot gets infected. Fuck. All right. I'll come back later in the
demon
week.
Demon pops
shit.
Up in a toilet full of shit. Okay. Come on. This is the one spot. Really? Really?
The one other thing I have to point out is that as she's crawling through the crawl space, the witch totem, before she discovers it, it's like covered in a little bit of cloth, and they have these very obviously domesticated rats. They're all have these beautiful shiny coats and morbid obesity, and they're like kind of near it, and they're like, oh, that's pretty spooky, huh?
I 100% thought that this scene was going to be the little domesticated rats praying to the skull altar witch totem.
It looks like it.
Oh, I'm not kidding.
Yep. Oh, such a better movie.
Okay, so liars. They're liars, yep. And they planted that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more The Conjuring. The Devil Made Me Do It.
57, 58... 59.
Rob a graveyard.
Oh, God. We were so close.
We were. I felt
guys,
it.
What you doing there?
Oh, Andrew is teaching me not to commit crimes.
Yeah, that's right. If Eli can make it 60 seconds without committing an audio felony, I'll take him out to dinner.
Which is good because I am starving.
Well, Eli, if you're looking for excellent eats at an affordable price, why don't you just try HelloFresh?
What's HelloFresh?
With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit.
I don't know, Andrew. I have special food needs. Dark special food needs.
Yeah, we know. Look, HelloFresh offers 27 plus recipes to choose from each week, from vegetarian meals and calorie smart choices to craft burgers and extra special gourmet options. There's something for everyone to enjoy, with all recipes designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity.
I don't know. Heath and I spent a lot of money on that billboard you wouldn't let us put up.
Yeah, because it was a war crime.
That was actually never settled by the UN.
Yeah.
Because I stopped you. But Eli, HelloFresh is 28% cheaper than shopping at your local grocery store and 72% cheaper than a restaurant meal without sacrificing the quality.
Yeah, I was actually a HelloFresh customer way before they were a sponsor. I love the variety, and they make cooking for myself at home a breeze.
Okay, guys, I am in. How do I sign up?
Just go to HelloFresh.com/awful12 and use the code awful12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping.
So I go to HelloFresh.com/awful12 and use code awful12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping?
That's exactly what I just said. Yep.
All right. Sorry, Andrew. Looks like I won't be needing that dinner after all.
Please beep that.
Yeah, 100% beeping that. Yep.
Thanks.
Mr. Torres, come on in.
Hi, Ed. Hi, Lorraine.
How's it going?
Thank you for agreeing to this. I think that after you see what we've got to show you, you'll see things our way.
Right. Look, I understand that you want me to go into a court of law and say that my client was possessed by a demon when he stabbed a guy. I got to tell you, even if ghosts are real, that's a bad defense, okay? There's nothing you're going to show me here that's going to make this...
Perhaps this...
Raggedy Ann doll?
Not just any doll, Mr. Torres. This is Annabelle, the haunted doll.
That's the silliest thing I've ever seen.
You're silly.
Yes, it is. It is. They had to change it to a different looking doll for the movie. But perhaps this will change your mind.
A broken plate?
From the Amityville Horror thing is the last remaining evidence.
Yes.
Wasn't that whole thing a very obvious real estate scam that your partner confessed to being a scam super publicly?
I don't remember that.
No.
Woo.
It's not what you said. Yeah, woo.
Seriously?
My God, Mr. Torres, it's a real spirit.
That is very clearly your wife wearing a sheet with the eyes cut out a la Charlie Brown.
Very real
Christmas.
Spirit.
I'm
you can
a
hear
ghost.
It.
Please stop.
Do the legal thing we want you to do.
Careful, Mr. Torres. You better give it what it wants, or you could be haunted forever. Take this seriously.
Okay, I'm going to go.
Don't forget to visit the gift shop on the way out.
Your home has a gift shop. Of course it does.
Yes.
To the left. And we're back. And now Ed and Lorraine are explaining the magic behind the witch totem that Lorraine very obviously planted under the house to make their stupid documentary more exciting.
Oh, yeah. Someone explains that this is used by Satanists in their rituals, and no. Also, for the record, witches don't generally have totems. I mean, look. Some do because Wicca is 99% white girls with undercuts appropriating other cultures. And one of the cultures that they like to appropriate is First Nation peoples who do use totems, but they use them in religious practice and not for magic spells in any sense that we would understand that sense of the word. So my point is that this whole movie centers around a witch's totem, which is like calling something a Muslim communion wafer. It's just not a thing.
I was also not clear on the relationship between witches and demons. This seemed like kind of a strange, you know.
Yeah.
They're not the same thing.
Yeah, they're not the same thing. No.
Right.
They interchangeably use demon and witch and Satan worshiper here. It is really very different things. It's like being like, oh, man, tell me about it. There's axe murderers. There's serial rapists. There's yoga instructors. I mean, it's really dangerous out there.
Right. So they're saying, though, that this witch totem got placed under the house by a Satanist witch to curse this kid.
Yeah.
David was cursed.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the exorcism part, it just like makes the demon pick another chair. So like you exorcise and the demon's like, I go in this guy now. All right. I'm inside the guy. Oh no, that guy got yelled at by the guy who's going to marry the sister. All right. I'm in him now. Like they move around. Nothing really gets accomplished.
Well, and as we'll learn later in the movie, and it's worth spoiling now, as we'll learn later in the movie, this demon has a 3-variant requirement, the child, the lover, and the man of God. Like, not only will this movie directly fail to explain why the fuck anyone would want to do this later. I mean, they will ask and the movie will be like, Conjuring 3. Nothing with a 3 at the end is good.
Right. So that means the exorcism helped, actually. The demon was like, oh, no, this is perfect. I have to do a 3 thing.
And now I was
stuck in this fucking kid. Okay. No, that makes it a lot easier. Thank you.
Waiting for a lover to come along. This has really worked out.
Right. But this is where Ed and Lorraine... Ed and Lorraine have a helper guy who, like, from Rolling Stone magazine, he's like a journalist and he's just a helper. He's an aide. They have a witch hunting aide.
Their intern. He's doing coffee runs.
Yeah, right. They have an intern and they're like, hey, intern, here's what you do. Send out these pictures that we made of the totem to everyone who knows the Glatzel family. And see if we can, you know, find something out that way. So, like, what would that letter even say? Like, they're going to write letters to everybody that knows the Glatzels. It's like, dear sir or madam, do you know anyone who carries around evil totems and you've just been ignoring it completely? Maybe you could help us with something.
We'd like you to start caring.
And it's 1981, so the letter is going to have to, right? It's not like you can laser print the photo and send it out, right? It's going to describe, okay, so it kind of looks like a squirrel skull, but picture it facing upwards and there's these little spikes on it. And
as the dot matrix is stuck. We have to, it's jammed. I got the, no, you're not lining it up right. You can see you're not lining up the spikes. Oh, God damn it.
This is also where Ed is pretty sure that this is the Disciples of the Ram cult. And he goes, you remember that, don't you? And I was like, no, because you made them up for this fucking movie, dude.
I'm thinking, hey, man, Temple of Doom will not come out for another 3 years. So, you know.
But luckily, they remember that there was a priest who totally knew all about that very real cult. And he retired, but they could go ask him about it. And when they say he retired, I wrote in my notes, if they do not find him chopping woods in a cabin in the forest, I'm going to be so fucking mad.
So close.
Good news. Yeah. He is feeding his chickens in a life of retirement.
Oh, and he looks like he has been decomposing for about 125 years.
Right? Like, he does. So yeah, Ed and Lorraine drive out to this guy's house and they're like, hello. We're random people who drove to your house and want to ask you questions. And he's like, I have chicken shit on my hands.
Best line of the movie.
So you won't shake hands with them.
Great response to meeting Ed and Lorraine Warren. Let me tell you.
I'm using that from now on for everything. Just, hello, I have chicken shit on my hands.
Heath, why haven't you texted me back?
Chicken shit hands.
Okay, but this did bring up a very spiritual question for me. Do you think con men, when they meet like this, right? Because the priest that this is based on is obviously a con man who talked about Satan shit. Ed and Lorraine Warren, con people. Do you think when con men meet up, they get to be like, hey, dude, we're working on this publicity shit. You want to help us out with this? Or does everyone have to pretend the whole time in case someone's a cop?
Oh, they have to pretend.
Oh, yeah.
This priest, this is a guy who helped fuel the satanic panic, according to their own story. That's who they're referencing here. One of those guys. Yeah.
It's a dirty, rotten scoundrel situation.
I get it. Excellent. So he's like, yes, I have heard of your Satanists. And this is where they ask why the fuck anyone would do this. And the answer is, actually, Satanists love chaos. His nectar is despair.
Okay. This whole scene is great, though. First, this guy, Chicken Shit Hands guy, is like, forget you ever saw this. They show him the picture of the totem. He's like, forget you ever saw this. And I was like, all right. If they're just like, sounds good, credits. I would have been so
happy. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, let's end the movie.
Best GAM episode ever.
So good. But no, he looks at it and he's like, oh, well, this is very sophisticated.
A sophisticated squirrel skull thingy.
Get the fuck out of here.
So weird. Yeah.
I love the idea of a really sloppy, low-level witch.
Yeah.
Like an unsophisticated totem.
Yeah, just the me of witches, just like can't get the squirrel head to fit on the jawbone. The demon kind of half enters the kid and then exits again. Huh? Was that good?
It's a cabbage patch doll.
Heath, will you come do my side work on my totems for me?
No.
Measure the totem twice, cut the totem once.
Right. So he says it's very sophisticated, and they're like, oh, okay. So why would someone attack a little kid? And old man priest is like, well, the why is irrelevant. And you watch Ed and Lorraine be like, no, that's our entire question.
It's the whole question.
We need to know why. And then Lorraine is like, okay, what if I rephrase without the word why? And she says it slightly differently without the word why. And he's like, yeah, come on in. I'll tell you all about this.
I have a creepy unlit basement that will answer all your why questions.
God, yeah. So they're walking down to the terrifying basement. Lorraine's like, I don't want to go in your terrifying basement.
Ed's like, we're going in the basement. Come on, we need this for our weird fucking house.
You want to end the movie like I suggested a minute ago? No, exactly. We're going in the basement. They get down there, and Ed is like, hey, cool. Yeah, this is a very evil basement. You should stop having a basement of evil. You should destroy it.
Well, we should clarify, in this farmer ex-priest basement, he has a collection of hundreds of satanic items. Right, little brass statuettes and totems and evil books.
There's a little mini Baphomet over on the wall. Yeah, it's
is that a bobblehead of Baphomet? Yeah.
And like he said, Ed's like, hey man, maybe you should destroy all these evil magic props. And he says, no, I collect them. It's like taking guns off the streets.
Okay. I mean, you can just destroy the guns, or in this example, your evil stuff, just destroy it. That would be better. And he's like, no, I like having it for nothing, no reason. I like having
it. For me, it's my hobby. And then he tells them about the cult of the ram, and they were evil, and they did terrible things, including, again, real quote from the movie, blasphemy, which gave them power. And I wrote in my notes, oh yeah, how many patrons did that blasphemy get them?
I am the third highest blasphemer on Patreon.
Okay. And apparently those powers that they got included the power to make a kid born with his heart outside his body.
Okay. Well, what? This needs to be explained the way I experienced it. He's like, yes, the blasphemers gave them great power. The day their cult leader was arrested, his son was born with his heart outside of his body. The next day, his wife cut her own head off with a train. And then Lorraine are like, shitty powers, bro. Those seem like bad things.
It's a really specific power that's not going to be useful very often. Making a child born with it. When would you use that again? Why would you need to have a child with an external heart?
He's also the leader of the... he did that to himself, or they did it to him for getting caught. Who the fuck knows?
But meanwhile, somewhere spooky, a Satan witch is lighting candles spookily.
With like a giant collection of matches that the witch had to keep in a little thing. It just, it seems like you'd get a lighter at a certain point. You're probably doing this spell a lot. You're doing a lot of light. Just get a lighter and like light
a
little thing.
Yeah, but if you get one of the stick ones, it wrecks the mood, right? You just like click, 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 and you're just like speeding through the candles. That's no fun.
Get an ornate Zippo with like a skull on it. I don't know.
Nah, because then you gotta tilt it down. It's a whole thing. Or you gotta put the candle
on top.
We watch
this witch refilling the Zippo with the little Zippo refill thing.
Going to the gas station, picking one out.
Do you have Zippo refills?
Why does this one say get her done? What am I, who am I getting done? Am I the her in this case?
But this is her casting a spell. So we cut over to Arnie. Remember Arnie? He's who the movie's about, apparently. He's mopping. Yeah. Apparently, when you get accused of murder, they immediately put you on mop duty in a room full of sleeping other prisoners.
Yeah, so he's mopping. And then, obviously, this is another one of those times where they're trying to do pop scares. So Arnie looks over to the side, and he starts staring. I don't even know what he was staring at, but I was like, hey, man, don't stare at random objects. That goes badly for you every time.
Don't do that.
Just ignore it.
This is the thing. You can get ahead of most horror movies. If you walk into your kid's bedroom and he's standing in the corner, you're just like, hey, what's going on, champ? Boobadoobadooba.
Yep.
Then you beat the demon at their own game. Don't stare at the bucket. But there's a bucket snatch pop scare here. Yes.
Yeah. We get to see the prison guard lady in like the next room.
Oh,
like,
she's so good.
She is my other favorite character besides David. She's fucking fantastic. She's just in the other room being like, this guy's staring at a bucket. He's going to get pop scared by that. What a fucking idiot.
Classic. This woman can be in every horror movie ever. Just in the other room, casually reading her magazine as demons rise and pull forth from the ether.
I wanted her to have like strings and she's like moving the bucket away from fucking
some guy who's hiding underneath gives her $20. I can't believe he fell for that. I'm telling you, they always stare at the bucket.
But alongside prison guard lady don't give a shit is the fantastic random sallow skinned person now solemnly intoning the Blondie lyrics.
Yep.
I defy anyone to watch this scene and not giggle hysterically. Like it is just
okay. Even Arnie can't stop giggling almost. No. He's like, hey, what are you? You reciting the lyrics to Blondie Call Me as a pop scare man? You're fucking up your pop scare.
He starts to explain it. He almost explains it. He's like, call me anytime. It was the song you stabbed the guy to. Yeah. Obviously, I should have picked something different.
Oh,
can I start over?
Oh, my God. Oh, God. If they had picked It's Raining Men here, could you imagine how much? You get this guy going, humidity is rising. The barometer is getting low. Oh, my God. It would be so great.
But yeah, that apparently spooks out Arnie. And then the Satanist, we get this cut of the Satan witch walking away from her cup like, good job. I did good. Good day of witching.
And we use so little of Call Me that we don't even have to pay royalties to Debbie Harry. Doubly evil.
Right. So meanwhile, back at Ed and Lorraine's place, they're staring at the witch totem in the hopes that it will look less silly. And it won't, by the way.
Nope.
It looks like someone's first attempt to build a bear. But this is where their intern comes back in and lets them know that there's the cops in Danvers, Massachusetts. Remember how they sent out all the photos to everyone in the world ever? A cop in Danvers, Massachusetts has seen a totem just like this where a girl was stabbed 22 times. Which is the same as Bruce, who also got stabbed 22 times.
Yep. So they go up to Danvers, Massachusetts to talk to this cop. And the cop explains that he's got a case where this might be involved. And he explains that, same as theirs, there's a witch totem that they found at the girl's house who had been stabbed. Now, doesn't it seem like the Satanist witch would just grab that when she's done? Like,
you'd think, right?
Okay, you have to put it right under their room, but then go get it. You were able to put it there, so go get it.
I'll just make another totem. It'll be easier that way.
Keep it on a string and you don't even have to crawl under there again.
You hate it when people leave a dirty workspace, don't you? It's just, oh, it's the worst.
Who closed? Who's the witch who closed last night?
This is fucking terrible. Is this virgin blood? It's all over the workstation. This looks terrible.
Now there's fruit flies. Yeah.
Didn't do any of your baby roll-ups. So they go to the cop and they're like, maybe we can help each other. And the cop's like, no, you guys are frauds. And
no,
they're like,
I'm a police officer. You help me with my thing. No.
And Lorraine says, okay, if you help us, we'll help you find the missing girl, the one who did the 22 stabbing.
I feel like you didn't hear me. I'm a police officer. No, you have to just help me with my thing. I thought that was clear.
And this is this movie's idea of fair and balanced, right? Like they're introducing the cop as the skeptic, and the skeptic position is, well, you know, obviously Satanists are real and they're everywhere and they conduct secret rituals and they're scary and evil and they must be stopped at all costs. They're not magic, you rubes. Fair and balanced. Yep.
But also, is the implication of this scene that if the cop said, no, I won't let you see the file, Lorraine wouldn't find the missing girl?
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, quid pro quo.
Yeah. No deal. No psychic powers. And now it is time. Now it is time for the test of Lorraine's psychic ability. The cop comes over and he says, one of these knives was used in the murder. The other two I just grabbed from the evidence
three
locker.
Knives. He has three. Three. She has a 1 in 3 chance of being magical now. That's what's been set up by this detective, this police detective.
My friends, I spent so much time learning to palm cards, and switch cards, and turn over cards, and switch them and swap them. This fucking guy is like, all right, fine. Flip this coin. If it turns out heads ever, you're a psychic.
All right, tell you what, I'm thinking of a tenor, and you prove your magic by naming a tenor. Pavarotti. Oh. Damn it. Okay. That's impressive. That's impressive. I can't name the other two either. It's like
the blind guy.
It's Enrico Palazzo. Yeah.
The blind guy? You were thinking second one was blind guy? Yeah, but I was thinking blind guy.
Andrea Bocelli? No, no. Now, okay, that's four now, I get. But it's, come on. Don't be a dick.
They drive a little bit, and as a further proof of her power, she goes, you missed a turn. The body's back there. And I just wrote my notes. Okay, nobody likes a backseat driver when you're looking for a corpse, okay, Lorraine?
I was just really hoping that she would get the knife wrong and they just leave and then credits. Yeah. It's like, nope. Oh, you're not magic and you can't be involved in this case. You're dumb. Go away.
I will note that this is the fourth time that Heath has suggested this movie would be greatly improved by just ending early. And I agree.
So many spots.
Agreed. 100 times.
Very much agree.
God, I love so. Yeah, they're driving now to go out in the woods to check out the murder scene that the cop had. And the cop in the car, he's like, okay, you know what? Fuck. I should have had you guess the knife more times in a row. I should have done it. Yeah. It should have been at least like several tests of 1 in 3 chance. Fuck. I could have. Basically, you picked out the Folgers coffee, and I feel like that was really easy.
I feel like an idiot.
I kind of like this scene, right? Because Lorraine is saying deliberately insane shit, right? Like Elvis is playing on the radio, and he's like, oh, did you meet Elvis? And she's like, yes, but both before and after he was dead. And it's okay. Like, I right. And that's his attitude. And it's like, great. I'm in a car with crazy people. And I'm saying the cop could guest on God Awful Movies as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. It could have ended the movie right here too. It could have been like, I met Elvis and dead Elvis. Cop's just like, all right, get out of the car. We're done.
Get up.
End if he pulls movie. Over and
yeah,
forces
he just
them
pulls
out
over,
of the,
yeah. The movie's over.
Oh God, that would be the best.
So back with Ed and Lorraine, they get to the forest and she's using her magic bracelet to find the dead kid.
Oh, fuck me. Yeah, she's swinging it like a dowsing pendulum so that, you know, lends a lot of support to Eli's thesis.
She has this amazing moment where she goes, something terrible happened here. And the detective's like, yeah, we just said we found a body here.
Murder. Yep.
Yeah. There was a murder.
You want to guess 1 in 3? I'm thinking of a number. I'm thinking of a number.
Between 1 and 5. All right, this is the real test. Let's get serious.
Yeah, so Lorraine is like, all right, I'm going to step into Dark World for a second and do my thing. See if, I don't know, they left a business card in Dark World. Maybe I'll find it. And she goes into Dark World. She has a little doodly-doo. And apparently she can see into the past, right? Because she sees the girl who gets murdered hanging out with her friend in the woods.
Yeah.
Why would she just now be using seeing into the past for the first time?
I feel like that would be a very useful thing in, you know, helping to solve crimes. But
go home and use that on your thing in Connecticut. You have a superpower.
You know that thing that you've been trying to figure out where it's from?
Use
your superpowers on it.
Most things happened in the past.
And if you're thinking like, oh, Eli, it doesn't work like that. No, later in the movie, it will work exactly like that.
Thank you. Just use your power. Force push. Do it right away. Basic stuff.
But yeah, she witnesses the murder in her dark world underneath thing. And she like gets lost in the character, like fucking Daniel Day-Lewis, and almost throws herself off a cliff.
Yeah. She starts miming like the stabbing over and over. And finally, Ed goes over and he's like, honey, stop. Can you stop it? You're
a little too much.
You look ridiculous outside of dark world where we are. Kind of embarrassing me in front of the detective.
You can almost hear him miming under his breath, like, look, we're moving from the fish is on the hook territory to you look like a goddamn crazy person.
Right. Yep. So she runs away. He tries to stop her. She runs away and she almost falls off a cliff and stops just barely. But then a demon grabs her leg and pulls her even further. And she gets almost all the way over the ledge, but she gets caught and saved by Ed here.
I love this so much. Like, again, we cannot overemphasize how unimpressive these demons are, right? Like, so we have a thing that can almost drag 140 pounds of Sidney Powell off a cliff, but not if there's a middle-aged guy who's just had a heart attack there to pull you back up, right? Yeah. Like, how do you get that job?
So there was a demon just hanging out off the side of that ledge in case a magical Christian lady showed up and ran to that spot.
Yeah, but make sure that this is a svelte one, like 120 pounds tops. That's all I can pull off the cliff.
I start to fall off the cliff. The demon's just like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I don't want to say why. I'm going to get canceled.
Oh, he fell by himself. Okay. Yeah, that was a freebie.
So he drags her back up onto the thing. And the cop guy, God, I love cop guy. He just wanders over and he's like, okay, well, that was a fun little play you guys did. Not good, not helpful. And they're like, check the water. She's down there. And he's like, oh, okay. Meanwhile, they agree to go check the water. And back at the ambulance, I guess someone called an ambulance. Ed is getting a blood thinner. So no Viagra that night for him.
Yeah. So yeah, Ed has a heart problem. And the EMT is like, hey man, were you sprinting through the woods with your serious heart condition and then dragging somebody off the side of a ledge? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, don't do that now. Now on. Cool. And then detective walks over and he's like, oh my God, turns out you were right. We found a body down there in the water. And that means you're both cops now and you get to see all our case file stuff.
Yep.
Ah, classic X-Files skepticism here, right? Like the cop's like, yeah, you know, so the 1 in 3 thing, I was still sort of on the fence, but now you said a body might have been thrown into water when a murder was committed near a cliff. Okay, I'm sold. God. Yeah.
He also, to try and double down on this, he goes, you know, we looked twice and didn't find anything in that water. And I wrote in my notes, oh, maybe try harder. Maybe really give it your all when you're looking for dead bodies and bodies of water. Now that a psychic lady. So Arnie's sitting in his prison cell, right? We cut over to Arnie sitting in his prison cell. And the preacher who talked to Ed and Lorraine earlier, he sneaks him holy water in a glass bottle. Yeah. He might as well give him a Swiss Army knife for the tweezers, folks. Right.
I wanted it to be a hollowed out Bible, and he opens it up, and it's just a smaller Bible inside. He's like, oh, okay, you can just give me either one of these by themselves. That's fine.
So while that's happening, Ed is like, hey, Lorraine, you know how you have superpowers where if you touch a thing or you're near a thing, you can doodly-doo into the dark world and then find out what's going on? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, you want to touch a dead girl?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you can doodly-doo? And she's like, yeah, let's go touch a dead girl. So that's what they do. They head over to the funeral home to see if they can touch the dead body.
Yeah.
So they get to the funeral home, which is closed because it's a fucking funeral home. And Ed breaks in and they just start sneaking around looking for a dead body to touch. And can I just say, I kind of want funeral homes to have a night guy, right? I just want grandma to be slightly better guarded so that the Warrens can't come in and touch him.
They need Ben Dover from Fletch 2.
Yeah, exactly. But they do eventually find the body. This is, by the way, where I muted the movie. So this movie's pop scares had no power over me for the rest of the film. Little pro tip there for you there. And so Lorraine finds the drowned girl and she squeezes her. And it's a really long time before she has a psychic vision. So Ed has this great moment where he's like, did you see anything or are you just squeezing a dead girl? But yes, she does eventually have a vision of the witch thing. And we can see into the satanic cave section of the mortuary. She walks through and this is her like going into the dark world and seeing the witch's coven. And they did that thing where Satanists have the upside down cross. And I just love the image of a Satanist witch nailing a cross upside down inside their coven and being like, ah, that's the opposite of how you were. Got him. Totally got him.
Yeah. And is this where the Satanist witch and Lorraine meet each other in Doodly Doo Land?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So that's how it works. Lorraine's in Dark World Doodly Doo Land because she's touching the corpse of the girl in Massachusetts. But that same Doodly Doo Dark World Land is connected. It's the same one. Everybody uses it. It's just there's one world for that. So
yep.
The Satanist witch, who's connected to Arnie and messing with Arnie, bumps into her awkwardly in Doodly Doo World. Is like, oh, hey, are you trying to foil me magically?
Oh, and again, Lorraine doesn't know that she can see her. So there's this amazingly funny, like, oh, hey, lovely coven you've got here. Is that Pier 1, the table full of bones? Stupid. But she lets go. She like releases herself from the dark world, but not before the witch can send a dead body.
Okay, this is the best. So she, yeah, Lorraine's still in the doodly-doo, and Ed is like, hey, Lorraine, we got a demon here, like a real one in my life, in the regular world. Lorraine, wet demon. There's a very wet demon. Focus up. It's right next to me.
Also, we should point out that this demon is portly. He's a portly fellow.
It's a large demon.
It is meatloaf. It is yeah. Meatloaf it from is Fight Club.
Looks exactly like meatloaf. So good. Meatloaf and naked.
Yeah.
Also naked.
Naked yeah. And soaking wet with sweat. Yeah.
And look, I think I can speak from personal experience here. Fat guy with his balls out, not scary. Funny, definitely funny.
Yeah.
Not scary.
This movie is very fun. This is a hilarious movie.
Yeah.
Yep. He has to, at one point, the demon starts to like run at Lorraine, but she's still in the dark world. So Ed is like, oh, I got to side tackle this big fat fucking son.
But he doesn't do it. He thinks about it. He's like, all right, I got to save Lorraine. But meatloaf demon sweaty just starts to run over and falls, trips and falls, smashes his face against the metal table. It was so funny. I could not stop laughing.
Why did this movie not think that was a comedy beat?
It's a pratfall. A demon has a pratfall here.
A demon does a pratfall and bang, poing, poings his head against the side of a thing. And we're supposed to be like, whoo, what terror has been invoked in me?
Just does like a 5-minute Chevy Chase improv falling over inside. It's ridiculous.
He might as well fart when he goes down. Just like, demon. That was a demon fart.
What's it, Eli?
So now we're back at Ed and Lorraine's place and they are spooked. Dang it. Spooked. But they realize that they can defeat the witch by destroying her altar because they found a book that says that, I guess.
Yep. Just like, hey, look, this book says we can win the movie by destroying the altar. Great. And then the girlfriend, Arnie's girlfriend, is like, hold on, but didn't you like stop the witch in the last scene? Maybe she'll just get discouraged and stop. And I was so happy to like be reminded of that idea. Like, what would that look like? A witch giving up, a witch just being like, ah. Oh,
angrily right. Stuffing a cup full of blood back into a cardboard box. She's back at us. No appreciation.
Just updating her resume on her computer.
But they explain that she can't stop now. her soul depends on it. So
is blood a skill? Can you, is blood stuff? Can I write that at the bottom?
I'm you know what? I'm going to have every one of my friends endorse me on LinkedIn for witch stuff.
But yeah, apparently Lorraine in her vision, they were like, Lorraine, do you know where the witch is? And she was like, it was cold and there's water damage and there was a train. And they were like, great, that's no help. But don't worry.
It will be.
Because apparently the witch right. is going to come to them. Because for no reason, and in a way that will never be acknowledged, Ed is just going to pass out right now.
Yep. All right. Well, now that we're done with a scene called How to Win Act 3, I guess it's time for one more quick break. And then we'll be back for the remaining amount of The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Okay. So on the count of three, you torch me.
Okay. On 1, 2, 3, go, or 1, 2, 3,
I'm not torch. Having this fight again. It's obvious okay. which one it is.
Okay. Hi, guys. I'm still in my office, I see. And oh, you have a blowtorch now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We were just taking care of our teeth with mouthwash.
And you need a blowtorch for that?
Well, no. I mean, yes. Yes, we do. You know how mouthwash burns super bad?
So bad.
Well, I just have Eli singe me a little while I swish. And now I hardly even notice the burning.
Yeah.
Okay, putting aside that there are several solutions you should have thought of before that, why don't you just try Quip?
The electric toothbrush people?
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, they've launched a new mouthwash to help you complete your clean. Plus, it comes with a refillable dispenser that's delightful to use and sleek enough to fit on any bathroom counter. See?
Ooh, it looks like a spaceship.
Looks like it's from a bathroom where every towel is the good towel.
It sure does. Yeah, Quip mouthwash kills bad breath germs, helps prevent cavities, and leaves you feeling fresh thanks to a formula that gives your mouth everything it needs and nothing it doesn't. Their 4X concentrate has fluoride, xylitol, and CPC, but they left out the artificial colors and stinging alcohol you'll find in a lot of other rinses.
But, Andrew, it's so sleek. How do they get all the mouthwash in there?
I see, that's the thing. Quip's refillable mouthwash is good for your mouth and the planet. With a 4X concentrated formula, Quip ships less water and more good-for-you ingredients. Each eco-friendly refill replaces a big, bulky 470-milliliter bottle from one of those other brands, once diluted. And Quip's refill bottles are made from 100% recyclable plastic.
Okay, but I bet I have to travel to the dangerous country of Quipvania to get those refills, right?
Nope. Add a mouthwash refill plan and make sure your rinse never runs out. With a customizable subscription, you can get refills automatically delivered straight to your door every 3 months. You can stay on top of your swish without lugging any bottles home from the store. And if you go to getquip.com/awful5 right now, you can get $5 off a mouthwash starter kit. That's $5 off a mouthwash starter kit, which includes the refillable dispenser and a 90-dose supply of Quip's 4X concentrated formula at getquip.com/awful5. That's spelled getquip.com/awful5. Quip, the good habits company.
All right. I guess we don't need the blowtorch.
Yeah. And with the extra time, I could tell you guys one of my magic convention stories.
Sure, I guess you could do that.
No, so there I am, doing a card trick for Mr. Boing Boing Boopsy himself.
Heath, you might want to hold on to that blowtorch.
Yep. Yep, holding it.
Okay, everyone. Welcome to our very real satanic cult meeting that happened at literally any time in history and was not just Christians freaking out about rock and roll.
Hail Satan.
Yes, hail Satan. So, as you know, we are a group of disaffected drifters or teenagers or rock musicians? Anyways, with nobody else finding out about it, we've managed to harness the dark forces of Satan, the Prince of Darkness.
We sure have.
Oh, I have so much Satan magic.
Yes, you do. We all do. So, right, we're going to use that Satan magic, that well of untapped eternal power and proof of the divine, not for wealth or power or fame.
Of course not.
Why would we do that?
No, we're going to use it to pester Hicks.
but only when the much more plausible explanation is mental illness.
Mental illness, exactly. Yes.
Of course, that is the best use of perfect magic powers.
Right, and I think we can all agree that doing that is worth the certain knowledge that we possess that will burn in hell forever for doing.
Such a good prank.
Totally, totally worth it.
All right. Well, so then let's break into groups. Group A, you're going to be putting obvious allusions to our activities in company logos. And group B, you're going to just be putting our symbols all over the area where we do our magic so that, you know, people can find us and identify us for, you know, ABC 60 Minutes bullshit.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. That's perfect. We should definitely leave a lot of clues.
We're Satanists and we're very, very real.
So real. We exist.
I'm pinching myself. And we're back. And now Ed is waking up from his spell of plot device-itis and finding an empty house with signs of a break-in.
Yeah, Ed's dad sense won't let him stay asleep in a house where someone just leaves the door open. Are we air conditioning the neighborhood here? Come on.
It's hot outside, too.
If the witch was fucking with the thermostat as part of the pranks here, that'd
be and thematically sound, right? It's her MO so far. And the door is burst open. Now, I just want to say that if the witch lady had been like buff as shit and kicked open the door, that's a twist I would have deeply appreciated about this film.
Well, the witch has super speed, we're going to learn. So like smash through the, like shoulder smash through the door, maybe?
Yeah, like Sonic the Hedgehog, sure.
I don't know.
But actually, he checks in the room and it's Meatloaf.
Meatloaf
again.
Demon.
I really wanted Meatloaf to be like, I'm serving you for that slip and fall in the morgue.
I know I felt kind of funny. I'm kind of angry about that. I just wanted to make up for that. I'm going to attack you.
But it's a trick. It's a trick by the witch to get him to stab Lorraine, which doesn't work because it's not that part of the movie yet.
Okay. These people need to put away all the knives that they have out.
Yep.
Like if you're in plots, like don't have them out. Just put them in like a locker or something.
Go hang out in a ball pit. That witch is fucked. But he's like, I don't understand. How did the witch manage to put the stabby curse on me? And their assistant is like, yeah, the totem must be hidden somewhere. And then the camera pans over to the most haunted and dead flowers.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the assistant. And by the way, we have at three different points in the script, all three of us have the like, wait, who the fuck is this guy again? Like the assistant just kind of like disappears for half an hour at a stretch and then shows back up to like, well, you know, my Aramaic is kind of rusty, but whatever. And here he's needed in this stretch to have brought in a vase full of black flowers. I mean, like Hot Topic goth black flowers that like, you know, it was like, well, you know, somebody sent these over when you were in the hospital and you're like, dude, you work for two trained demonologists and you thought the black vase with the black roses was the one to bring
into
the house.
There's green smoke coming off of them. You brought that in. There's literal green smoke.
At his performance review, they're like, okay, so first of all, coffee runs were always enthusiastic and great. Yeah. Second of all, you did bring a witch totem into the office. So
yeah, but that's what we find out here. The witch totem is inside the vase. So just to be clear, Ed was lowering himself onto the vase.
Right.
That's canon,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He must have hovered over the vase at some point.
Demons go up.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the next morning, the Scooby gang are all trying to figure out who the witch demon lady is.
Okay. Yeah. And they have a chalkboard here.
Oh, my
like
God.
They're figuring something out.
Oh, it's
fucking amazing. Oh, okay.
Beautiful.
It's just pictures of the like four people in the plot with arrows going from one to the other. Like, here's someone, the demon went from here to here. And then they have it like a pyramid scheme or like a Rico chart. And at the very top, there's no picture. It just says, witch?
Question mark. Oh, my God. This scene absolutely needs a montage, right? But sadly, they already blew their montage music budget on Blondie's Call Me. So, you know, you could have gotten Jimmy Jameson to work cheap. I have heard that. I have a good authority, but nope.
Yeah. They're very clearly like, all right, well, we got to read through all our paperwork, probably as a montage. Fuck, we already
can't do that.
Blondie.
Oh. One line that's said in this scene that I loved so much is, Satanist power is strongest at night.
Yeah.
Which night? It's not always night on the planet or even at the same time.
No idea.
Just go to Australia and you fuck up the witch's whole day-night schedule.
That was like on a... There was an episode of Philosophers in Space and we were talking about like bad 50s sci-fi. And one of them has the line like, I forgot it was springtime back on Earth.
Yeah.
But yeah, the name of this movie now is Find the Witch,
yeah.
Satanist, which, by the way, it's not going to be revealed that it's a character we've met, which would make sense, right? If it turns out it's Arnie's girlfriend or even the little boy's mom, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. That's connected to the plot. She is truly madly deeply just some lady.
Yeah. Who decided to curse just some kid.
Yeah. Some kid, to be a right, dick. Because yep. chaos is her nectar. So back at the house, Ed and who the fuck are you guy are looking through the file. And my friends, this is one of the most masterfully bad scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
Because what they're going for is they triangulate where the killer is based on where his kills are. But they're too stupid to write that scene. So they're like, all right, one guy killed and Allentown, New York, then 14 people killed in this teeny tiny circle, which is very obviously this town. And Ed checks the file and he goes, wait a second. She brought it home from college. Move the pin over.
This is the dialogue here is truly like 1960s Adam West Batman levels of logical leaps, right? It's like, demon, that rhymes with Lehman. That's how I pronounce lemon. Lemons are sour.
Okay.
Sour things make you pucker your lips, which is the way we used to do it in Connecticut.
Yeah, wait, you said Lehman Brothers?
Yeah.
Lehman Brothers is an investment bank. Bear Stearns. Bear. It's a bear. Yeah. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. So while they're doing that, Lorraine is visiting Father Kastner. Now, Father Kastner, he's the creepy priest who was kind of decomposing that we met earlier, who has the room full of evil stuff. So she checks in to see if he has any more things that are relevant to the plot. And he does.
Professor Ex Machina, can we...
This is where he reveals that the curse needs three victims to be complete. The child, the lover... and a man of God, but they already didn't succeed with the child. The child lived.
Right.
So it's over. Also, Ed is a man of God now. He's a fucking psychic investigator. Short of no illusions, that's about as far from man of God as you can get.
Yep.
But since she asked the right questions, he would like to invite her
back to the basement.
Back into the basement for even more story.
And that's when he runs away super fast.
Yes.
So Lorraine is like, Father, you walked really fast to get ahead of me. You're already in the evil basement. Okay.
Based on the staging of the next couple scenes, the father is like, I have something to show you. Fucking sprints down the stairs, sits at his desk in his little lair full of evil black magic shit, and then turns out all the lights. So that when she comes downstairs, he could turn on the lights and be like, hello. Hello.
I was been here the whole time. My chair's not spinning. It's not a spinner. I thought I could do that too.
He's screeching it along the floor.
Hey, you want to just stand up and spin around? Maybe you just stand up and do a little spin? No? No, he's got a photo album to show her though.
And that photo album is, this is my daughter. I have a photo of her.
Okay, go on.
I raised her in my basement full of Satan magic.
Sure, that checks.
In retrospect, not a great idea.
Yeah, he says my wife died at childbirth, so I had to keep it a secret. So I have now a secret basement child that I haven't told you about yet. Why would you have to keep that a secret? I don't understand any of the logic of that.
But why wouldn't he have revealed this before?
Yeah.
His daughter is the Satan witch.
Right. And the logic is only like, well, you know, it's the third act. You've met all the other characters. We're not introducing a new character. Are you kidding me? So by process of elimination, this kind of had to come from you, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he like half apologizes because he's like, yeah, so, you know, I do have this evil basement of Satan magic stuff. And you know, you get obsessed with something. It kind of, your kid ends up doing it. And like, all right. Bottom line, my kid is the witch who is evil and causing all of this.
Yeah. And it's not like, by the way, I know her weakness. I know where she is. I know how to help you. He's just like, hey, this is obviously my kid's work. I don't want to be that guy, but I have one of her totems up on the fridge. And I was like, that is my kid.
Yeah.
So that is my kid.
Also, best worst accidental metaphor here. The religion problem is just like the gun problem. Like they did this earlier when he was like, I like to, you know, take the guns off the streets, but then have them here. So like, yeah, his evil religion does that too. Yes.
Yeah. Only if his daughter had shot herself in the face with a witch totem would the metaphor be more appropriate. Okay. So meanwhile, over at the jail, the prison preacher is doing his best magic to keep Arnie from killing himself or Ed. It's unclear. But he does have one piece of useful information to her, which is that he does have underground Satan tunnels he knows about nearby.
Not the nonchalance with which she's like, oh, yeah, the tunnels under the evil. Just to be clear, we're in a basement, right? We went down the stairs. It's badly lit. You're saying there's a basement under that basement. Got it.
Yeah, he explains and then like runs right through it into his next thing. And she's like, hold on. Did you say you have a dedicated system of evil totem tunnels under this right now? Yes, he does.
But I also want to show you my board game collection. I don't know if you've ever played Azul. It's a lot of fun. It's really, those pieces look beautiful. Oh, no, you want to talk about the murder tunnels. Okay.
Yeah. So she runs away, but now the witch is here. His daughter, as it turns out, is in the basement or maybe the tunnel system. They're connected, I guess.
It is not clear at all.
Right. So she's somewhere in there and then she actually shows up in his little office area. And he's like, wait, let me switch off my lamp and turn it back on. Fuck. That's twice. I tried to do a dramatic spin. I'm not doing it. Really not being impactful with my hellos today.
There's a line he says to her before she super speeds behind him and slits his throat. That is the movie I want to watch, where he says, and here I thought you were just here to see me, which implies that there is an unshot scene where witch Satan daughter shows up and like, hey, dad, I was just in town, wanted to see you. Check out the underground Satan tunnels.
Really?
You want to go to Old Buffet?
I do, but that's, I feel like you hate me, right? Because the evil basement?
Oh, I mean, Satan, because of the Satan magic? I mean, you know, can you ever really hate anyone? Hey, by the way, if anyone asks if there's a Satan witch around, just don't mention it.
Okay, there it is. I feel like you're setting something up here.
So she super speed kills her dad.
Yeah, I mean, we cannot pause too lightly over the flash power. She like runs behind him, quick slices his throat. Again, this power is like the Superman 3 logo wrapping you up thing. Like, it would be super useful. Never shows up again ever, right? Like,
nope.
Remember, her main antagonist at this point is Sidney Powell, kind of walking through dark tunnels. Like, if you're the fucking Flash, I feel pretty confident that you could take out Sidney Powell. Like, that's not going to be a problem.
You'd think. Yeah. Okay, speaking of Sidney Powell walking through dark tunnels, this is my favorite part.
Oh, yeah.
Sidney Powell is searching around trying to, I don't know, do detective work on these evil tunnels. And she comes across the big room of the altar that's been doing this spell the whole time. She's been seeing the visions of this when she goes into Doodly-Doo World. Uh-huh. So she's like, oh, this is it. And it's this really big table with all the stuff on it, with the matches and the incense and the big goblet of evil, whatever. So she remembers from before, okay, we just have to destroy this altar to win Act 3. That was in that book written in Aramaic. So she tries to flip this table over like a board game, but it's enormous. Heavy. It's way too heavy. And she's just like, I can't flip it.
Words cannot express, dear podcast listener, how long our protagonist is foiled by a heavy desk.
Yep.
So much screen time. More screen time is spent on this heavy desk than is spent on why the witch might want to curse random neighborhood farmers.
But just break the stuff on top. Break this magic goblet and stuff and the magic items? What, is there a rule that you have to flip the table?
There is no... She doesn't, like, try fucking up the stuff on the desk first.
Oh, no. Dude. Oh, no.
It's flip or GTFO.
And can we point out that while she is, like, you know, struggling against this for, like, 8 minutes, the witch is like, hey, remember in that last scene where I broke the speed of sound? Now... great time to walk dramatically. Like, oh, can you hear my high heels? They're making the clip-clop noise. Like, I'm closing in.
How are you doing that? It's a dirt hallway.
I feel like she got pulled into Satan's office, yeah. And he was like, hey, were you using super speed? Because we're trying to go for, like, a creepy demonic thing. So if you're... I'm just going to need you to go extra slow for the rest of the night.
I was trying to build a moment. Is it not? Okay.
That this was like a fast zombies versus slow zombies kind of thing? Okay.
Yeah. So Ed now pulls up outside. Why? Go fuck yourself.
I have to... Every scene, every item that flows from the next for the next 5 minutes is legitimately hilarious from this point out, right? Like, it's beginning
a really
with...
really funny movie. This is a very funny movie.
Yep, it's a good comedy.
Beginning with, there's a back door into the secret tubes. Like,
There's a delivery entrance. Like, seriously, he pulls up and he's like, steps out of the car and he's like, oh, there's a delivery entrance right here. This is perfect. So I'll just smash the lock on this and I'll be into the evil tunnel network. Great.
I really wanted to watch the scene from the city where the witch is like, seriously, I have to put a second exit in. And the city's like, yeah, lady, if you want permit for your murder tunnels, you need two exits. All right. One that is fire safe. She's like, ah, fire, so much paperwork. I just want to kill some local farmers. Jesus. I mean, not Jesus, Satan.
Damn it, I always do that.
So now the witch, who has had super strength to burst open doors, the ability to raise the dead, super speed, and a knife, is going to wrestle with Sidney Powell a little bit, which is my favorite moment in the movie, because this is where Sidney Powell / Lorraine hits her in the head with the rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're doing the Saving Private Ryan, I'm slowly lowering a knife onto you thing. And then she just hits her in the head with a rock.
It's a de-eyeballing, right? Like, she's she's wiggling the knife around in, like, a circular motion. And it's like, I'm about to cut that eyeball out. Yeah. And sure enough, picks up a rock and, like, George Foreman at 48 fighting Evander Holyfield, like, clumps it into the side of the head of the witch. I cannot tell you how hysterical it is. It's the second funniest thing in these 3 minutes.
And look, she does the villain thing where she touches her temple and she's like, huh, blood, because that's what villains have to do. Just once, I want a horror movie for the villain to be like, ow, fuck, oh, ow, man. Right in my head. Ow, it's right in my head.
You could have got my eye with that. What are you doing?
But now, my friends, it is time to win Heath Enright's love and affection for all time and all eternity.
The greatest. So Ed has broken into the tunnels. Sidney Powell just smashed the witch. Ed shows up and he's like, oh, hey, Lorraine. Cool. Great. Turns out Lorraine is the witch, actually, right? The witch has somehow disguised herself.
Yeah.
And then
so it's the witch. And the witch goes, oh, hey, Ed, how you doing? Pocket sand.
Fucking sand, my friends.
Literally pocket sand. A witch. So that witch at the beginning of this day was like, all right, I've got all my hexes. I've got a knife. I've got this. I've got, you know what? I'm going to fill up one of these pockets with sand. Just in case.
Or also this, she's doing her Satan training, right? Beelzebub rise from a pile of black goo made of baby bug. And he's like, okay, today we're learning pocket sand. This is great for pretty much all hand-to-hand combat situations you might get into as a scene witch.
Sounds weird. We're doing pocket sand and wrist control today. That's just good stuff to have.
I was going to say, she might as well do wrist control or step on his insole.
Yeah, so I think Ed turns into a demon now.
I have no idea.
Oh, maybe the pocket sand was... also demon-based?
Yes.
Somehow?
It is magic sand.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ed's a demon now, and he still has his giant sledgehammer that he broke in with, mm-hmm. and he just starts swinging wildly at
everything in his area with a giant hammer, but he's blinded by Pakistan.
It's
breaking everything.
Great. It is fantastic. Now, first, I wish they would have used some of that montage money for Peter Gabriel's sledgehammer right here. Like, that would have just been perfect with the theme of the movie. But second, like, I don't know if you guys have ever swung a sledgehammer before, but me too. Like, and it's fun. And like,
fun.
You can put a hole in stuff, but like, he swings it and like everything it touches, right? crumbles and explodes. Yeah. It's so great.
It is a rocket launcher / sledgehammer. Yeah. So he is, just to be clear, attacking Lorraine with this sledgehammer. And I don't know what saint, what angel, made them choreograph this scene for 27 minutes, but it is some of the funniest footage ever.
It's so long. I could not stop laughing. He's swinging wildly with it. Like, imagine Eli Bosnick has a giant hammer. He's somehow on fire and just became a demon. And now we get to watch whatever physically happens for like a half an hour.
The actress runs out of ways to say Ed.
Yeah.
Right? She's like, Ed, no, smash. Ed, no, smash. All right, seriously, Ed, smash.
Edward? I don't know.
But luckily, she knows the cure for demon pocket sand, which is... Remember our first date in that gazebo?
Can we doodly do back to like an hour in this movie? Yeah.
But that's it. She's like, remember the gazebo? And he's like, I do remember the gazebo. We totally did heavy petting. And then he wakes up from his witch curse. And luckily, again, very luckily, their little like hammer fight has taken them exactly to the witch's table that she couldn't push over earlier. So now Ed sledgehammers the table and the curse is broken. That's it.
It is.
The only thing I have to point out about this scene that I love is they break it and then the witch shows up and they're like, oh, right. Fuck. Witch with superpowers is still here. But because they need the movie to end, apparently the demon is like done with her. So the demon comes and like takes her to the principal's office of hell.
She does the like contorting her body like the Bonitis guy from Futurama. Like, and mind you, it is replete with the same like kind of like crunching potato chip sound effects. We haven't talked about it, but like three or four of the characters have done this, but it's not just like The Exorcist. It's not the head spinning around. It is, you watch like the fingers like bend back into curly cues. If you've seen that episode of Futurama, like you will laugh your ass off here.
Yeah. The witch walks up to them and they're like, ha ha, your curse is broken. We smashed your table. And she's like, yeah, well, I mean, I'm still going to kill you. I have like this knife and
I have
super speed. I'm going to kill you. And then it was just out of nowhere, the movie realizing, oh yeah, that's right. So we have to have all our bones start breaking now.
Yeah.
And then that different, yeah, was it like a higher ranking witch boss just teleports over
to the regional Satan?
Yeah. Like some sort of corporate structure of witches. And this witch has to be like, yeah, you're decommissioned. You have no bones. There you go.
Yeah. We literally get a Satanus ex machina.
Yeah.
So they crawl out of the evil tunnels of the witch. And this is such a nothing scene. I just loved it so much. He's like, oh, I forgot my heart pills. And she's like, I keep one inside my locket. Except this was never established as stakes. He's not even having a heart attack. It's just like an extra thing they added into the movie.
I wanted it to be the wrong pill, though. Like, that's really for like decades. She's kept that one pill. I wanted to be like, fuck, wait, that was Molly from the other night. Fuck. Okay. You know what? Whatever. Fun night at the hospital. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's go.
Spit half out. I want half.
Yeah, cheater. All right, so now we watch Arnie get convicted of murder because that's what he did.
Right, right.
Right, so this is actually happening. We're actually watching this court case, and it's so good. Everybody, please rise. We have a verdict from the jury. And I want him to be like, okay, yeah, I did definitely murder somebody, but I just want to point out that Van Morrison, Brand New Day is playing, so, you know.
You guys all hear that, right?
Yeah. Not guilty, right? Obviously, Van Morrison.
But yeah, this is where the title card lets us know he's guilty, and he got sentenced to 20 years.
No, he got sentenced, but only served five?
Yeah.
Yeah, the title card says that he spent 5 years in prison, but he was sentenced to 20. He was let out by those, you know, soft on crime liberals.
But he was charged with manslaughter. Is that correct? I mean, it feels like murder was what he did, based on what I saw and I think the actual history of this.
Yeah, so I was confused by this and I did some hunting around on Wikipedia. Wikipedia seems to think there was more fighting going on than just like stabby, stab, stabbing. So maybe that's why he got a reduced sentence. Or maybe the judge believed in demons. I don't know. Maybe he went over to dinner with Ed and Lorraine.
I thought what they were kind of saying in the movie was like, okay, well, it's not murder if a demon makes you do it is the title of our movie. It's manslaughter.
The you will only serve 2 decades for this slightly lesser felony makes a weirder subtitle. But look, first degree manslaughter is still pretty serious shit. Right. Like it's okay. So and Eli is exactly right that, you know, the reason that that's the charge that you would go for as the prosecutor is that the defense testimony is going to be like we were fighting then like wrestling around and like there was not I did not have the specific intent to stab this guy. Right. So I did have the specific intent to do him grievous bodily harm, but that was offset by the fact that, you know, he's punching me and stuff. So
also demon. So minus also 15.
Also demon.
Sorry, I made the mistake of saying what a sane person would say.
Right.
Right. But again, you got to remember that Arnie never went with the demon defense. That's just Ed and Lorraine just stood outside of the courthouse being like, you should totally use our demon defense. And the movie's been like, I mean, he meant it in his heart. He wanted to use the demon defense in his heart. Oh, so yeah, that's it. There,
that's
it. What?
No. That is not it. We would need to wrap up the very important thing that we mentioned earlier.
Then Ed surprises Lorraine with a gazebo.
A gazebo, right? Yeah, and then they kiss. Not in the gazebo. They just got
in
the gazebo.
Oh, that bothered me so much.
It was right there.
Thank you, Heath.
And we're going to end the movie with, you know, because they always do like a based on a true story and Ed and Lorraine were on the news and TV all the time. So they have the world's shortest clip of some news guy going, hey, isn't it literally impossible to enforce any law if a guy can just say the devil made me do it? Hard cut, end of movie.
Yep. I thought the movie was going to answer its own question here. No, the movie is like, fuck, that does fuck up our entire movie and system.
You'll have to find out in The Conjuring 4.
The end. The end.
Yeah.
Smoke bomb.
Cut.
Smoke bomb.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the movie. So, important question before we wrap it up. What is the devil going to make you guys do? Any good plans for that?
Heath, I mean, you see my clients, so I kind of feel like the devil's already won this one.
Yeah, fair. And for me, Andrew's still going over the contract. I've got a subsidiary shell soul that we're doing this whole thing through. True. It's very complicated, but I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited.
Okay.
Maybe next week's movie.
Fractional soul marketing. Just wait. It's going to be huge.
I've got a number, Eli. 1, 2, or 3. Are you magic?
You have to tell me. It's like being a cop.
Wait, it's up to me to say, show me your dick?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for a review of The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. But that's not going to do it for the episode just yet because we found some more bad art on the internet. So, Eli, what's on deck?
Well, Heath, as you know, one of the best worst series we've covered here on God Awful Movies is the Encounter movies, wherein Bruce Marciano goes around passive-aggressively helping people. So when we learned that the PureFlix original The Encounter TV show had hit the airwaves...
a show about this guy.
Yeah, we had to check it out. So we'll be watching The Encounter, the television show, episode 1.
All right, well, with that to look forward to, we're going to bring episode 304 to a merciful close. Huge thanks to Andrew for joining us. Anything you want to plug? Anything important you're doing? People could hear more Andrew, more Thomas, maybe. What do you do?
Nope.
All right. Modest.
And of course, a big
thanks. Listen to opening arguments if you don't. It's great. Oh, this week's episode was so good about the Joe Biden gay people thing. I was wrong about that, too. I retweeted it, and then I deleted my tweet after I listened to opening arguments.
Well, thank you. John Cusack is still wrong about it, so.
There we go. Yeah, everybody wins.
I love him so much, too. Anyway.
High fidelity is so
fucking good.
I'm going to
get as famous as John Cusack, and I'm going to retweet your show, and you're going to be like, I love you.
That's true. He did. He retweeted us out. He doesn't understand the
it's tweet, real,
but it's fine. You know, it's cool.
Yeah.
All right. And of course, let's also have a big thanks to our Patreon donors for all the generosity. If you'd like to help support the show, you can make a per episode donation at patreon.com/godawful. And then I'll get you early access to an ad-free version of every episode. You can also help us out by leaving us good reviews and by sharing the show on all your various social media platforms. And if you enjoyed this show, be sure to check out our sibling shows, The Scathing Atheist, Citation Needed, The Skeptocrat, and D&D-, available in all the podcast places. If you have questions, comments, or cinematic suggestions, you can email godawfulmovies@gmail.com. Legal services for this podcast are provided by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres. Woo! Our theme song was written and performed by Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. All other music was written and performed by our audio engineer, Morgan Clark, and was used with permission. Thanks again for giving us a chunk of your life this week. For Andrew Torres and Eli Bosnick, I'm Heath Enright, promising to work hard, turn another chunk next week. Until then, we'll leave you with the Animal House close.
The adorable little boy, David, and his other brother, who doesn't appear in this movie for reasons you're about to understand when I get to the end of the sentence, literally sued the guy who wrote the book this movie was based on for defamation and intentional infliction of emotional distress. And I realize that's more sideways than future for the Animal House close, but I felt like you needed to know that.
Works. Important stuff to know, yes. Bruno's family is working on some really fun manslaughter ideas of their own.
Ed and Lorraine Warren went on to set up a three-shell game in Conjuring 4, The P is Haunted, or something.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.